On this episode of Sea Level, I talk with Michael Sangbush, CEO and co-founder of Elatype. Mike, thanks for coming out. So I'm really excited because we get to talk about two of my biggest passions, which is startup companies and tech and the ecosystem in Atlanta. Like, what does it look like with the future of tech? What's coming here now and how Georgia's growing as a whole. So thank you for coming out.
Thanks for having me. I mean, I love this topic. I love what you guys talk about on this program. And I think we're going to have a great conversation.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So give me your background. Give me your story.
Yeah, well, I'm a software developer by trade. I'm not originally from Atlanta. I moved down to Atlanta in 1996 for the Olympics. Okay. And if anybody's was here in 96, you know, in 96 things were booming. Mm-hmm. It was happening.
I think the Olympics had a lot to do with pulling a lot of people down here. They started experiencing Atlanta.
I mean, it was the catalyst for kind of what's been driving the city over the last 25 years,
right.
And so just being here the whole time, seeing it go, you know, from the Olympics to where it is now has been amazing. I moved down and went to Georgia Tech. I got a computer science degree, spent the first half of my career being a software developer. Okay. Went from software development into product development and product management, and then got the entrepreneurial bug and started working in technology startups here in Atlanta. And in the last year and a half or so, I started my own company, and we are currently based at Ponce City Market. Mm-hmm. And if you've, again, talking about what things booming in Atlanta, if you've been down to Ponce City Market,
amazing.
It's the spot to be.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've redesigned the whole place. And
it's a great spot to be.
Yeah, it's awesome. So where did you move from? I didn't catch that.
I moved down from Rochester, New York.
Okay, cool. I'm from Jersey. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so are you going back anytime soon?
For a wedding, but that's about it.
I moved down in 96 because I had an uncle that lived down here. Yeah. And summer vacation for me was always coming down, you know, to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I graduated high school, I was like, packed my bags and I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And stayed.
Yeah.
You know, because Atlanta's just a great spot to be. It's not just a great spot to go to school, but it was a great spot to start a career, start a family.
Yeah.
And there's not really a lot of great reasons to leave. You know,
right.
It's a good spot to be.
You have everything here. That's what I love about this city. It's unlike New York. I mean, yeah, you have New York. I love New York a lot because I spent a lot of time, you know, in New York and then in LA. But what's cool about Atlanta is it's like you've got the city, but then the farther out it starts getting country, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
And then if you go south, I mean, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours, I mean, you're at the beach, you know, so it's like it's a cool spot. Not to mention the international airport. I mean, literally, you can just hop on a plane. I mean, we do a lot of stuff, you know, filming in New York and L.A.
Yeah.
I hop on a plane, I can go out to New York and go out to L.A.
Yeah, I think Atlanta's just it's a really balanced city.
Yeah.
And you know, just kind of typical Atlanta. You know, we're always really good at a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, we're never like the best at anything. You know, whether it's sports or whether it's like business or whatever it might be, we're always like just like pretty close, but we're really good in like everything. And I think that's why a lot of people stay is because there is balance.
Right.
And if you're in, you know, like LA or San Francisco or New York, I mean, there's not a lot of balance.
Mm-hmm.
Things are really out of whack in some cities. And I think Atlanta just and the people in general are just really, really balanced, and that's why people stay. People love it.
So. I think it's, you know, it's interesting because I have this conversation a couple of times. It's like Atlanta, like we have a hodgepodge of a lot of things, but like, what is it really going to be known for? What are some of the big industries, you know, that are going to be, you know, popping up that, oh, that's Atlanta. You know, like if I say like Hollywood, you know, you kind of, right? In New York, you know, stuff like that. Like, so it's interesting to see what's going to happen. I feel that Atlanta, like just the entrepreneurial spirit in Atlanta is just, it's awesome. Like it is ranked the best city to do business.
To do business. And I think from a startup standpoint, and so being in the technology startup kind of area over the last 7 or 8 years, you see a lot of contrast between what's going on here in Atlanta versus what's traditionally gone on in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of what is Atlanta known for? So if you follow startup or technology investing a lot, you hear about people raising, you know, huge sums of money.
Godly numbers.
You know, not just millions, but tens of millions of dollars.
Right.
And what you see coming out of Atlanta as compared to what you see in other areas, particularly in the Bay Area, is when investors come out to Atlanta, what they're always impressed with is like how much gets done with so little.
Mm.
And so this is kind of like the good thing and the bad thing about technology startups and, you know, kind of venture capital in Atlanta, is that there's not much of it, you know, compared to what you see in other areas, But because there's not much of it, the companies that are being built, like, actually have revenue. They're actually making things.
Right.
And they run really, really lean, very efficient. I think a lot of that mentality comes out of Georgia Tech. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of one of the things that they kind of beat into your brain at Georgia Tech is, you know, go out there and build stuff. You know, actually, it's about ideas, but it's also about execution. And I think that's kind of the essence of the Atlanta kind of startup culture mm-hmm. is that, like, you got to go out there and actually build something.
Right.
And VCs that I've talked to, venture capitalists that come from the Bay Area, they're always like, hold on. They'll talk to a company like, you raised how much? Mm-hmm. And we're talking like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And out there, the same company would go raise like $5 million or $10 million.
Right, right. Yeah. Do you think the money is so loose because of so many of the successes that have come out of the Bay Area? Is that probably why?
Yeah, it's a bubble too. You know, it's like in any bubble, it's all relative. So they might not consider it a lot of money, but mm-hmm. in the rest of the country, it's an insane amount of money. Mm-hmm. So not only are there like inflated expectations around kind of funding rounds out in the Bay Area, but just the overall cost to run a business is inflated.
Oh yeah.
Employees are expensive.
Isn't it like if you're making $100,000 a year, you're in poverty in the Bay Area?
Yeah.
Like it's
no, that's like a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sounds insane to anybody in the rest of the world.
Right.
Like regular people are going, that's a ton of money.
Yeah.
And you'll have dual income families on the West Coast that are, quote unquote, struggling to make ends meet.
Right. Right.
And you're going, my God, like you both work for like these huge companies.
Yeah,
and they're like, they're like. They're like, yeah, it's hard. And they live in very, like, these really small houses stuff. And they come out to Atlanta. Yeah. And
then they see what they have.
Yeah, and it's the same thing kind of in your industry more, too, like in the film industry.
Yep.
I have friends in the film industry as well that have moved from, like, L.A., and they're coming out here, and they're going,
yeah,
like, God, this is, like,
it's
this is
insane.
Amazing. It's so different.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that you come from, like, a studio. Some of these people are coming from a studio apartment. It's like, now they're getting houses that are, like, eight times of what they were living in. It's just... Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's funny to see that dynamic.
It's crazy.
You know?
Yeah, and that's so when it comes to building a business, you have employee costs are higher, rents higher, taxes obviously are higher, regulations higher. And for a lot of reasons, people are choosing to kind of relocate to Atlanta to do a lot of that stuff. And I think the companies that are coming out of Atlanta are getting the attention that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. So. Going back to that money piece about like raising money and how it's like really loose in the Bay Area, it's funny. Frank Patterson, who's the president of Pinewood Studios, he tells a story that he had an investor friend in the Bay Area and he had this app idea. So he goes, he calls his investor friend. He's like, hey, let's go grab coffee. And they're just talking. He's talking about his idea and his concept. And he's like, oh, that's really interesting. That's cool. He goes. So how much are you looking to raise? He's like, and he gives him a dollar amount or whatever. And he's like, so he's figuring he's going to go back and put a business plan together. Yeah. He said by the time he went home, he had $500,000 in his account from this investor. And he talks he's like, that may not be a healthy thing for them to do, but that's the mentality out there.
It really is.
It's just because there's been so many successes in the past. Mm-hmm. And our hopes here on the film industry side is that investors realized on the film business, because of Atlanta and all the great incentives here, trying to make them understand that this is a good, viable investment, just like with tech.
Right, it's so similar, kind of the parallels between what's going on in the tech industry and then the film industry here in Georgia. And I think in both industries, like that first step is, how do we attract more investment? Mm-hmm. How do we attract the right people? How do we create our own really good people and only like really good, whether it's production or companies coming out of Atlanta. I think that's all the first step. Mm-hmm. I think the second step is, well, how do we keep it all here?
Right, right. I'm always looking at like success stories, right? So I believe that, so we have the studios coming in here on the film side, which is great. There's just chunks of money, but the indie market like is not too many people are paying attention to it. And I believe that's sustainability. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of these little wins and people see those things, right, that's going to be long-term, right? So with a lot of these, and there's so many talented young tech entrepreneurs, right, that like, anyone can get access to it, build an app, just start. And I think once we have those little micro successes, like where it's like, hey, he is a startup, had this app idea or whatever, this technical idea, and then got it funded and got it to this point, that's a win. And then showcasing that to other investors so they can reinvest back in the community.
Having those kind of success stories to kind of build on top of them. And I'll, you know, to kind of continue the analogy between kind of film and tech, kind of in film, in the film world, you know, you have these indie films, right, which are kind of getting their own funding. They're kind of bootstrapping themselves.
Financing, I talk about it all the time.
Right? And as opposed to getting like a big studio budget, right? In the tech world, there's companies that are bootstrapped, right, where they're raising money kind of from friends and family. Bootstrapping means you're kind of like being creative on how you raise money, or just creating, you know, a profitable business that generates a profit that you can reinvest back into the company and grow from there. And it's those kind of wins, and Atlanta has a few of them. And the biggest, most notable example is MailChimp. And so MailChimp's been around for 18 years. They've never raised a dime of venture capital, and they've built an amazing business doing it, you know, kind of on their own. And you have a couple wins like that, and then the next company that needs to get funding out of Atlanta, they can point to those kind of success stories and build on top of it. And of course, there's huge companies, huge startups in Atlanta, like SalesLoft is gigantic, Terminus, Calendly. There's big companies here that are raising, you know, huge sums of money, but they're only able to do that because of those other success stories that have happened before it.
So with that being said, there's what other new startups do you see that, you know, I mean, I know you do a lot of consulting. So what are some of the things that you're seeing? Like what types, or is it like apps? Is it, you know, what type of technology stuff?
Yeah, so kind of I do a lot of mentoring at ATDC. So if you're not familiar with ATDC, it's the Advanced Technology Development Center down at Georgia Tech. It's the state's largest startup incubator. So my previous company was there, current company is based there. I also do a lot of advising and mentoring to startups that are coming out of these facilities. I usually mentor on the technology side of things. And what I usually focus on is how do we help companies turn ideas into like real products? And if you're an entrepreneur, specifically one that doesn't have a technology background, just because you can design it or you can draw it or you can get some screen mock-ups made does not mean that that thing's going to work. And so you have to understand kind of a few levels deeper about what does it take to build it, how much is it going to cost, how to hire the right people. And so I work with a lot of startups in that area. But as far as like types of companies, like what do I like going on right now? The trend my company is in right now, we're Elotype. We do digital marketing monitoring. And we use platforms like Slack and Microsoft Teams. Do you guys use Slack at all?
Well, we use Basecamp, and we use a mixture of a few, few different things.
So messaging platforms like Slack or you see it with Microsoft Teams. You see a lot of messaging going on things on websites. You know, you have a lot of chatbots on websites now. Intercom, Drift. These are new ways to deliver technology through messaging, right? Messaging is like a huge new area of software development. And there's a bunch of companies in Atlanta that are doing some really great things in messaging, where the way that the user interacts with the product is not through a browser. You know, it's not through an app, it's through chat messages. And you can see chat messages coming through like chat bots on websites. You can see chat bots on text messaging. You can see voice bots like Alexa. So there's this whole new wave of technology that's being created where the technology layer is like buried behind messaging. And if you can build a product that delivers value to a user, you don't necessarily need to send it through an app or through a browser. If you can send it just through like text or voice, that's how you get into like artificial intelligence type assistants, chatbots, virtual assistants, those type of things where, you know, behind the scenes, you know, what am I working with? You know, what's over there? Is that a person or is that technology? You know, what's going on back there? And so AI, machine learning, chatbots, text bots, messaging applications.
What about voice?
Voice is just a different way to do messaging. And natural language processing, all of these things are technology, are technically feasible now where they weren't, you know, 5-10 years ago. So the tools exist now to do natural language processing either through voice or through interpreting what people are trying to say through a chat message. The tools are there to build products now that take advantage of that, and you're seeing this like huge growth in those type of products, and there's a bunch of them in Atlanta that that we really like working with. That's what my company does as well.
I've been following voice closely because I believe that voice, that's the, like the next, that's the revolution. I mean, it's here now, but it's just going to be more and more, especially like in search, like when you're looking for things.
Yep.
And you know, one of the other things that, that the agency does is we help with personal branding and helping people, you know, CEOs brand themselves and companies, you know, brand themselves. And what it's going to come down to is you're going to say, like when you say, you either say, do I want a tissue or do I want a Kleenex, right? Well, Kleenex is actually a brand.
Right.
So if you ingrain the brand in people's minds, when voice comes out, they want something quick and easy, and they're going to say, you know, give me this, right? And so I think voice is definitely going to be huge. You know, titles of movies, like, you know, hey, I want to watch so-and-so, and then it pops up on the TV. Yep.
You see that everywhere. And that's really only happened in a way that kind of works in the last 3 to 4 years.
Right.
There have been attempts in the past, but it's almost becoming ubiquitous with Alexa and Siri and, you know, ways to communicate with technology. Mm-hmm. That's not, like I said, like a browser. It's not the web. There's an internet behind it, but it's not through the web layer. And it's not an app either, right? It kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It kind of, it's spread across all of it. You know, it kind of just permeates a lot of things now where voice is really natural for folks, and it's a new user interface, it's a new medium.
Mm-hmm. It's convenient. Right?
It's convenient, and one of the things I like to think about is, you know, when you have a new medium, new technology is created that takes advantage of it. And that's happened, like, you know, all throughout history. You know, you create a printing press, and it's like, well, what can I do with this? Well, I can print books, and I can print newsletters, and we have newspapers now. Like, that's a new thing. Same thing happened with radio. Same thing happened with TV. New medium. Well, what's the message for that medium? What am I going to do to take advantage of that new way to communicate with people? It happened with the internet. It happened with apps, right? So back to 2008, the idea of building a product as an app was totally unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, if you were going to say in 2008 when the iPhone came out, if you're going to build like a product, people would go, where's your website?
Yeah.
It's an app. And they were like, what do you mean an app? You install it on the phone, it's in the app store, and people have been like, well, I don't understand, that doesn't make any sense. Well, it was a new medium, right? And I think what you're seeing now, kind of 10 years after that, is messaging. And messaging apps, voice apps, chat bots are like a new way to deliver value. And because it's a new medium, it's a new paradigm, there's a new design philosophy to it, and I think it's every bit as transformational as what you saw with the internet, with the browser, with the app store. Right now, the last 3 to 4 years has been messaging. Mm. Messaging and voice, absolutely.
Yeah. So what about like, and I've heard this before, and I've had actually some people on the show talk about like privacy issues, like with WhatsApp and stuff like that. So how is the industry responding to stuff like that?
Yeah, I think that's one of those kind of, you know, kind of unforeseen problems where in order to do voice or to do chat correctly, you have to be listening. Mm. If something's listening, that means they're listening to everything. And, you know, back on the web, kind of, you know, the problems with privacy was if I share something on the web, you know, what happens to it, right? Did I fill out information on a form? Is that website tracking me? How much of my profile do they know? But those, at the end of the day, are still things that, like kind of like you're providing. And there's certainly like a privacy issue there.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, you're typing it into a browser.
You know, you're typing it. And then you have like these, you know, these data breaches, and, you know, we've heard about data breaches for the past 10 years, right? They happen way too frequently, but people understand that there's that level of kind of privacy risk. But when you get into voice and you get into chat, you have this idea of like active listening, where it's not like you're providing it. It's like it's passive input.
Yeah.
And in order for like an Alexa or for Facebook or for Siri to do what they do, they have to be listening all the time.
Right.
And when they say, well, we're not saving that stuff or we're not listening, they have zero credibility because they've been listening to everything for 10 years, you know, and now it's just becomes they're listening through voice, and that microphone is always on.
Always on.
You got the other problem with video. So the one with the Ring doorbells, you heard that one?
Yeah.
Well, a Ring doorbell's got a video camera in front of everybody's house.
Yep.
That thing's recording all the time.
Right.
And it has a voice component to it as well. So I think privacy is a really, really big and legitimate concern that not just consumers, but kind of society does need to be worried about.
There are some people that like, because there is a lot of stuff going on about privacy, and it's funny because I don't really know, who really reads the terms and conditions?
No one.
You know, yeah. It's like they're just kind of clicking through, and you know, nothing is for free. There's nothing for free out there.
Right.
So you're giving up, because like with advertisers, people pay big dollars,
right.
You know, to capture your information, behavioral stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like what do you like? So I know how to market
right.
to you better. Some yeah. people actually like. It's crazy because I've actually run across a few people that are like, oh, I don't mind them marketing because at least they're giving me products that I want.
Yeah.
And then there's some people that don't even realize. Like, wait a minute. How'd you know I was searching for that?
Oh,
you
and,
know,
a lot of people I think have no. And nor should they have any understanding of like how that stuff, like what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And so when it crosses over to things like politics, mm-hmm. everything that we've heard in the last kind of, you know, 4 years around targeting and, you know, demographics around kind of, at least in this case, political stuff.
Right.
Advertisers have been doing that for a decade.
Sure.
With the same type of demographic information, socioeconomic information, tracking, you know, profiling, just being applied to a different medium now.
Right.
And I think a lot of people have, they don't understand how that works.
Yeah.
And it is scary.
Yeah.
It's not scary when it's applied to market a product to me.
Right.
But like, that's just like one use case.
Exactly.
Like the same information is highly valuable in a million other things, which do get scary and dangerous.
Right. Well, what's happening, especially in that yeah. sense, when you're controlling the population, it's putting everybody in a bubble, right?
Oh.
Based on your search history, it's classifying you, and now it's only feeding you things that it thinks that you want.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So once you've searched a couple of things, and you might have been doing research. It's funny, I heard a story of a guy that had the FBI show up at his door because his search history was how to murder somebody. Well, he was a writer for
yeah.
a TV show.
Right.
And, you know, it was like he was, all that search history was
yeah.
in there. But it's like, so in this sense, like if you're, you know, it's putting you in this bubble and you don't hear the other side of the story.
Yeah, I think there's so many places to go with that. That's such a great observation. When you do get put into that bubble, it's great for marketers,
mm-hmm.
right? So the reason why the bubble was created, or the ability to create the bubble,
yeah.
was because marketers wanted a better way to send more relevant
yep.
advertising. And it works. That's why Facebook became Facebook.
Right.
Because the ads on Facebook work.
Mm-hmm.
So that grew. But that technology that supported that was then used for other things. And then when it's used for a bubble around conversation, that area of it is, well, not only is this bubble being used to market products to me, but it's being used to send me the news that I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It's filtering out conversations that my friends and family are having that doesn't fit my bubble,
yeah.
and it reinforces itself.
Right.
And there's this kind of vicious feedback loop of, like, I like that, I like that, I like that, I like, and it's feeding into the bubble, and what you're doing is you're turning that bubble into a wall.
Yeah.
And when that happens, like, you know, there's unintended side effects for that.
Well, it's funny. I had a great conversation with somebody yesterday, and just in political views or anything, any type of view. A lot of times, people are not willing to hear the other side of the story.
Yeah.
Whereas in the tech world, when you're put in a bubble, you don't even have a chance to hear the other side
yeah.
of the story. So you're always going to be stuck in this area
yeah.
here.
Yeah, I think it's a real problem, and it's manifesting itself in many different places where, like I was saying, it started with advertising and marketing, and it kind of just, you know, kind of grew out into kind of, it's this, you know, three-headed monster now of things that we're dealing with. I mean, I think that's life in 2019 now.
Yeah.
Those are the big issues we're dealing with from a technology standpoint. Privacy in particular, the ability to build those bubbles that are kind of reinforcing, the ability for those to grow opens up a lot of privacy concerns because there's a lot of really, really valuable information about you that's used to kind of make those bubbles, and that becomes an opportunity for abuse.
Right.
Sure.
Right. So switching gears a little bit.
Yeah.
So I want to learn a little bit about, like, what are some of the struggles that you see that some of these young tech entrepreneurs are facing when they, you know, they have this concept and they just want to get it out there. What are you seeing in the market?
Well, I think what I see kind of being on the inside more is, for anybody who's listening and is thinking about going into startups, is that there's way more failures than you'll ever see. and that can be a hard thing to learn for kind of a new entrepreneur, is what you read about in the news or online about what's going on in technology. It seems like there's a lot of successes out there. But the statistic is something along the lines of 90% of startups fail. Mm-hmm. And everybody hears those numbers, but they never actually see the failures. And so kind of the dirty secret, I guess, in startups is that, you know, a lot of it's a lot harder than people make it out to be. There's certainly, kind of using kind of your world, like a Hollywood version of like technology and startups, that everyone's like an internet millionaire or a Bitcoin billionaire.
And they see the celebrity. They don't see the years and the amount of no's that celebrity had to hear in order to get there.
They don't see those, and they don't see, and those are only the ones that have survived.
Right.
So in addition to only seeing the survivors, this is really kind of like how far removed I think the problem is. What you see out there is the success stories of the survivors at the point when they're a success. Mm-hmm. So even the success stories have years and years of struggle and hardship, setbacks they have to get through in order to achieve success. And then there's an order of magnitude more that never even get to that. Mm. And so I think that's a real gut check. That's a reality check for a lot of entrepreneurs who are starting something, that it always is going to take twice as long and cost twice as much to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I think even then it becomes, it is always still going to be a challenge. Getting funding is a thing. So we talked about that a little bit earlier as well. Getting somebody to write a check is way harder than kind of the scenario you described before, which is like, certainly you'll hear a story of somebody who went in and had coffee with somebody and then got a $100,000 check later that week.
Right.
Never happens that way.
Yeah.
Raising money for anybody who's interested in kind of becoming a startup entrepreneur, raising money is about relationships, just like anything else.
Sure.
It's about making relationships, nurturing relationships, keeping people up to date with progress, and then slowly but surely asking for investment. Mm-hmm. And that investment comes in and it's lumpy, it comes in, it's delayed, you have funding rounds that don't close, you have ones that get close, and hopefully at the end of the day you can get enough money to come in to help fund your vision.
Right.
And if you can deliver on that, then raising money, you know, from there becomes maybe a little bit easier, but I don't think there's many startups that have ever said, yeah, you know, funding was always easy for us. Yeah, it is. It's hard. Yeah. Harder than people think.
Yeah. So in wrapping up, if there was one piece of advice that you were to give to an entrepreneur that's a tech startup, right, what would you say?
I would say get your ducks in a row before you start. Understand that for a long period of time, you're going to have slim to none, to no salary. Be prepared to take that hit. Understand it's a lifestyle change as well. Understand that especially as a founder or as the CEO, you're gonna be hiring people that make more money than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you're in it because you have a dream, you have a problem that you wanna solve, you're passionate about it, you're making a lot of sacrifices early on for an eventual payout where the risk of you not achieving that outcome is very, very high. And if you can get through it and kind of keep your sanity, you can count that as a win. Mm. But just kind of be prepared for get everything up and running, kind of get everything, your ducks in a row, your family, to understand that it's a big change.
Yes.
And go from there. So
that's awesome. Make sure everybody's on board before you start driving.
Yeah, because the road is going to be a lot more bumpy than you could possibly imagine.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate you coming out.
Enjoyed it.
Yep.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the episode. If you guys enjoyed it, show some love, give me a thumbs up, and subscribe. Also, make sure you check out our exclusive C-Level group on Facebook.